Why do you have to be this way?
Blame my
this
parents.
This is why we bully you. Met them.
I met your parents. I don't know what to say to them.
Sorry. Just say sorry.
Do you ever think about the fact that there are so many genetic failures that had to happen for this to come out?
This is like what losing the genetic lottery. No, this is what losing the genetic lottery like 15 times over looks like, boys and girls.
He's just self-burning himself at this point. We're just
one
like,
of my favorite insults I've ever heard is when you go, you're just a side effect of an out-of-date condom.
That's great. Shit. That's fantastic.
That's
how I feel with Alex. What?
Actually, you know what? That works. Dead. That works because I was not planned.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Anime Club After Dark, the podcast that delves into all things anime, manga, and otaku culture related. Nailed it. First time. I'm your host, Nitai, the so-called proclaimed, self-proclaimed poser extraordinaire. I'm joined by our fleeting fox, senpai, Alex.
Woohoo! Hey, let me tell you something.
Tell me something.
We're going to get into it tonight, boys.
That's not a great pickup line on a first date.
We've been together for 8 years. This is not our first date.
We're also joined by our big black titty goth girl, Chinoda.
There's no way he wrote that down in his name.
What? I didn't know he didn't.
No, oh my god. I was going off script.
I'm going off script, bro.
Okay.
Clearly.
And we have our Zarov source with your John. Obviously,
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
By who?
By you. See, you threatened to take away his JoJo card.
John, he doesn't watch sports. He doesn't get it.
Oh, it's never mind. I forgot that you're not American enough for me.
You have to explain it. You
no.
You
if I have
American
to explain
being...
the joke, then it's not funny anymore.
The joke is, for those who don't watch sports, in most professional sports, athletes have media obligations, and sometimes when they're pissed off, they just say, I'm here so I don't get fined.
Seriously?
Yes.
I didn't know
that's
that.
So sad. Are they like contract? Like, is it like a contract?
Yes, they're contractually
thing?
Obligated to do media obligations.
Oh, I am contractually obligated to do a minimum amount of episodes with Alex a month.
How are you doing so far?
Not
he
great.
Wants to unalive.
He wants to unalive himself so bad right now.
So today we're starting a new series of sportcasts. We're doing JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Woo!
Woo-hoo!
Our last series of sportcasts was the Monogatari series. We might come back to doing it more because there's new anime coming out, which is great. Yeah, but that book is now closed, and we said a long time ago we'll discuss JoJo's Bizarre Adventure because all of us like JoJo's, right? Who doesn't like JoJo?
I mean, yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, it's pretty good. It's pretty good, guys. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I literally just had my DVD and I just put it away and I don't know where it is now.
Terry stole it. Terry
stole it.
My
goddamn Terry.
I've stolen it. Who knows?
Must be the work of an enemy stand.
It must be the. God we're not even Terry. Talking about that yet. All right, we're talking about part one. Literally, arguably the worst like part in all of JoJo's.
Yeah, we will be spoiling part one for all of its entirety. But before then, just a bit more context, just in case anyone who's listening to this podcast hasn't seen JoJo for some reason. So this show started originally a manga. Is a global phenomenon, sold over 120 million copies, and sparked multiple anime adaptations, video games, Gucci clothing lines, some live action movies apparently, and an actual presentation
franchise.
Yeah, and an actual presentation at the actual Louvre, which is I think Araki is the only mangaka to have paintings featured in the Louvre.
He's the only Japanese artist to be featured in the Louvre, period.
There you go, which is insane. That is insane. The lasting legacy of this series can be felt over different types of media. It's crazy. The joke is once you go JoJo, you can never go back. Because it's everywhere. Everything
once
is
you go
a JoJo,
you become gay.
Yeah, like literally all the memes, right? Is that a JoJo reference?
Yeah, it's funny getting new people to watch JoJo because you can see their descent into madness. Because you'll just be walking down the street, they'll see these mannequins in a clothing store. They're like, "Yo, they're doing the JoJo pose."
Everything is JoJo.
Everything is JoJo. You start seeing it everywhere.
Can I ask a quick question though for the people that are here? Because very few people I've heard that got into JoJo's say they got in through part one. So what was everyone's like introduction to JoJo's?
Part three, like a lot of normal people. Really? I was just like, yeah, yada, yada. I can't beat you up if I don't get closer, whatever that line was.
Can't beat the shit out of you without getting closer.
Without getting closer.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, yo, what is actually going on here? And then like the stupid Fist of the North Star style fighting with like ghosts and stuff. I was like, okay, this seems interesting enough. Let me go actually like watch this. And then you get to part one, you're like, what? Where's the ghosts? Where's all the ghosts? Where's the yada 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 does a? I guess there is technically one. He says it. Jonathan does say it one time.
He does say it once.
He laid the eggs.
Yeah.
What about you, Chinoda? How did you get into it?
As for me, I mean, I knew about the memes for a while, and I always did intend to eventually watch it. I didn't watch it until I met up with Alex, and we watched the first episode in a hotel room together.
This is actually the first year I went to Otakon. We actually watched the first three episodes of JoJo's Part 1 in our hotel room.
Why wouldn't That's you at crazy. Least let him watch part or episode four so that way he actually had something to look forward to?
No, no, no. You can't do watch. That. I did enjoy it.
You can't do that. You have to start from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm not one of those that hate part one or anything. I it doesn't matter what the media is. I'm like, I'll just start from the beginning, whatever. Like, whether it's bad, good or bad.
John, you asked that question. This is a dude who watches the shittiest isekai ever and says, it's pretty good.
Nah,
cheers, bro.
I just think that I find it hard to believe that people would watch part one or read part one or watch part one and be like, I want more of this. Mainly because of how it starts off. Like the first three episodes of JoJo's is that entire arc, right? It's like it's nonsensical. So it does set up the pace.
Incredible. What are you talking about?
It sets up quite a lot of how traditional JoJo's is structured. Like, it is the exoskeleton of how we structure our new JoJo's. But it's just it's so crazy and nonsensical. Like, who is this evil-ass dude just being purely freaking evil, bro?
I think it's incredible how... Because, so, the manga first started serialization back in 1986. And with so watching part one, it feels like an artifact, like from a different time, you know. It's definitely showing like from what time period it is, because like a lot of like creators first, like, you know, works or whatever, you can see the influence from something from their own contemporaries. Like part one feels like kind of adjacent to Fist of the North Star in some the way it's written, in terms of like, so you got your big muscular like main character and he's gonna beat the shit out of everyone, he's a good guy, you know, whatever.
It's certainly but, like Fist of the North Star in its character designs.
But then you get all these oddities
and we're like, that's definitely JoJo. And the craziest thing about JoJo that I can say, it's been running for so long, for like more than 40 years, but still we have nothing like it. There's not anything like it. And the craziest part is the more it kept going, and we'll see it the more we get into the series through this podcast, there's more and more to like, man, this is not like anything I've ever seen, which is crazy because it's so
flavor of uniqueness.
Well, one of the crazy things is that, so on a lot of like ranking websites, they consider JoJo's at least part one to be horror. And I completely forgot how much like gore there actually is in part one, because I was like, oh man, there's people being impaled, people's heads getting just like exploded. I was like,
it's gothic horror.
Yeah, it's like
even Victorian horror.
It's Victoria. And I was like, I completely forgot that because I'm so far removed from part one. Because again, you know, it's been so long since I recently just rewatched part one to do this. And I was just like, because I'm all the way over in part five now, you know, years and years beyond this. I'm like, I forgot that this is how this started. And it's
amazing.
It's so unique in the fact that how much Araki has changed, but also has not changed. Because again, the basic structure of JoJo's has always been the same, which is great. But I do like how they lean more into the it's always been absurd. It's always been like just in your face about like unapologetically in your face about stupid fucking shit and cool moves. And that's what makes it so fun.
And you mentioned like the horror aspect. That's one of the things that like also stand about JoJo. So the way its arcs are divided to parts, and each part is quote-unquote self-contained because it has its own cast of characters, its own themes going on, and it's also its own genres, which is insane. Like, because part one is Victorian horror, you know, you got all these like the aesthetic and you have the actual like body horror and like a lot of gory stuff, and then you get to part three, which is like around the earth in 80 days or whatever, and then part four is Scooby-Doo, and each part can be so different from each other and still like be so cohesive to be like it's JoJo, you know.
It's Scooby-Doo. Right. It's
Am I wrong? Scooby-Doo. Tell me when I'm telling you.
You're
lies.
Not wrong. It actually is. Every part is so vastly different like that.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, part two is like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It is exactly is. He's an archaeologist.
It is.
Isn't it? Yeah. And then
well,
yeah,
technically,
three,
technically,
like...
Jonathan is an archaeologist. Just saying, but whatever.
But Joseph.
Aw, Terry.
Joseph becomes a real estate agent.
Alex, how did you get into JoJo's?
I got into mostly through the memes of part three, but also back in the early days of the podcast, Riker was the one that really got me into JoJo's because he was a huge fan. Back then, like I think it was like the second year we were doing our podcast, I think we did a JoJo's spoiler cast, but we did the entire anime series up to that point, which I think was up to part four.
Yeah.
And we did it all in like an hour and a half.
That was a lot of
fun. Not very good.
So before jumping into this adaptation, this 2012 adaptation by David Production, which is like, it's incredible. It's awesome.
Real quick, how did you get into it?
Through the memes. I just, when I got into anime, that was around 2015, and that's when JoJo really started to blow up with part three.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people got introduced to JoJo because the memes are so, they're everywhere.
The memes,
and there's
like
so many references to JoJo's in actual animes, right?
Yeah, it's crazy how you go back to, because again, 2015, that time was like when it feels like, for me at least, felt like everything was blowing up, like more and more, whoa, look at this. So the memes are everywhere, and like I saw some like the crazy OPs, like, oh, this show looks fucking weird. People like it, I'll give it a shot.
It's funny. So the adaptation that David Production did came out in 2012.
Yeah.
Or at least the first season, which encompasses parts one and two, which is around the same time that something like Attack on Titan had come out. And anime was starting to get
big. Really?
Yeah,
when Attack on Titan first came out.
Yeah,
well, 2013 was Attack on Titan, but it's around the same time.
And then part three, it was two seasons. So that first season of part three was 2014, and then the second season was 2015.
I always wonder if this adaptation, even if it was done by the exact same team, if it had come out 10 years earlier, I wonder if it would have been anywhere near as big.
So that's a crazy thing.
I wonder if it would have
been
even bigger.
I don't think so.
So JoJo always had like a big presence, especially in Europe, but in the West, it was very hard for it to like break out and be like a major hit. Like, so you had back in the 90s, you had this like, I think three episode OVAs for part three, which some people, but it was very like cult following esque. Like, it wasn't that well known.
Let me tell you something. The English dub for that is just the rude levels of cringe.
It's incredible. adaptations would like, you would have the PS2 games for part five that some people would know, and some people have vague memories of a 2D fighting game by Capcom that is about JoJo. It's like, oh, what is this fucking weird characters and stuff? That's strange. But the JoJo never broke out too much until the 2012 adaptation.
Yeah. That's why I always really wonder if it had come out in mid 2000s, like 2005, 2006, I don't think it would be near as popular as it became.
So I do unfortunately agree with that. I think the popularity and the memes were
it was the right studio at the right place at the right time for the adaptation.
The internet, yep. I think, helped JoJo in massive way.
Yes.
Definitely.
100%.
Like, no other show like breathed memes like JoJo because it's such a fucking weird show, you know?
And those years, I would argue, was the golden age of memes.
So, just to speed through just something really small that I think is fucking cool. So, this isn't the first adaptation that was made for part one. Back in 2007, Studio APPP produced a... yeah, pretty much. Produced a feature-length movie that was released in theaters. There was a lot of conspiracies about that Araki hated the movie, or it was a bomb, or what... None of that was ever confirmed, so we don't really know much about like what the fuck happened with this movie.
But is this what you linked, that YouTube video? Yes,
this is what I linked. Okay. So, so there is a trailer for it out on YouTube, and there's a 15-minute video that's basically like some scenes from the beginning of the movie spliced with storyboards that someone got a hold of and uploaded. So we, because this movie is lost media, it was released in theaters, but it was no home video release. So there's literally like no way to get a hold of it.
And apparently a vast majority of the film reels were completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of
honestly a shame.
There's a lot of misinformation about this movie. We just don't know much about it. But it is really cool to see it. And two cool facts about it. So whoever was supposed to voice Dio, oh, he did voice him, is Hikaru Midorikawa, which you guys might know as the voice of Gridman.
Yeah.
And the voice of Sakamoto from Haven't You Heard of Sakamoto?
Kudist.
Which is kind of crazy. And the guy who voices Jonathan is Katsuyuki Konishi, who voices Tengen Uzui from Demon Slayer, the flashiest of Hashira. And he voices all of Pokémon, apparently. And he voices one more character, which I implore you guys not to look up. Because later on, he'll come back, and it's kind of crazy to think about.
Okay.
I'll just leave that as a...
little dangling carrot.
So that movie, like, didn't take off. There was a whole, like, plan for it to keep going as a series of movies, but, again, that didn't work. And then in 2011, David Production approached and talking about and creating the adaptation, and their mentality... from the get-go was to be as faithful as possible to the source material. Because at that point, people would be like, oh, this manga is unadaptable. It's too, like, the poses are too crazy. The line work is too insane. But they were like, we'll be as faithful as possible to the source material. And here we are. So apparently it worked. And around 2011, the production for the first three parts were greenlit at the same time. So the roadmap was laid, part one, then part two, and part three, which we will get to eventually. So released in 2012, part one was directed by Naokatsu Tsuda and Kenichi Suzuki. The character designs were done by Shimizu Takako, and the music was composed by Hayato Matsuo, which I kind of, just in quick, Gerald, because I know as we go along in the parts, I know music is it's a major factor in JoJo's. So I was wondering, what did you guys think about the soundtrack? Not necessarily the OPs and EDs. We'll get to them in a bit, but the soundtrack itself.
This might be a hot take, but Jonathan's theme is probably my second favorite main JoJo theme.
Really?
Giorno's is my favorite, but yeah, Jonathan's is. I like the horns that come in. Da, 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 da. I love it when it comes in like this. It's so cool. It's very heroic sounding.
I can see that.
It's a very Jonathan theme.
It's very Jonathan. It's very like when I hear that, I think, yeah, that's Jonathan Joestar.
Honestly, for me, the soundtrack for part one, I thought it was okay at best. I wasn't the biggest fan of it. It wasn't I hated it, but I was like, yeah, standard.
I felt the same way. Mainly because after you get to part four, it's just like, yo, the music, though.
Yeah, it really kicks up.
Like, the rest of the parts have way better music than part one. However, part one, again, my biggest issue with part one has always just been the story, just how nonsensical it is. Because it's hard to tell people JoJo's is music, really not good. Story. I know, but it's hard to tell people how good JoJo's is, and then I get them to watch part one. And they're like, they watch the first two
episodes.
What
the fuck is this?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, okay, just trust, bro. Just trust the process. You have to watch it. It gets better, I promise.
There's world like, building wait. Going on. Just trust me on this.
It's but, crazy, though, how, like, because you say that, but I think one of the biggest things that drew me in with from the get-go were the OPs. And this series is known for legendary OPs. Oh, and yeah. I think this that one, first one, is one of the best OPs they've done.
It's so good they go back to it in part six.
Spoilers. So yeah, JoJo Son Chino Salame by Hiroaki Tomi Tominga. I think this OP is incredible. Like, I can sit here for 30 minutes dissecting it because there's so much that goes into it. But this wasn't made by David Production. This is done by Kamikaze Douga, which is a different studio who specializes in CG. 3D animation.
They did Ninja Batman. They did that episode of a couple of episodes on Star Wars, whatever that thing was, the Disney Star Wars thing.
Visions.
They also did Pop Team Epic.
Mm-hmm. Did they do Pop Team Epic?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was them.
Oh my god.
Also, fun fact, I got to meet the guy who directed the OPs that Kamikaze Douga did with JoJo's at Otakon a couple of years ago. It's pretty cool.
That's crazy. Yeah, this OP is insane. I love it so much. I love the energy it has. Also, it's I think it sets the tone super well to how dramatic and over the top part one is and JoJo in general. You know, it kind of gets you in the mood and be like, this kind of shit is wild, you know? I feel like it's like an incredible tone setter.
And it also sets the tone for the sound effects that come in near the end of the parts with OPs.
Oh, that's very true,
The ED is also something to take note of because it set the tone that for the rest of the series, all EDs are basically Western music picked by Araki, and then like the studio did something with it.
I mean, also like the memes that spawned from freaking Roundabout, dude. To be continued memes.
Oh, they are still ongoing to this day.
Yeah,
which is wild to me.
It's weird that JoJo's is one of the few examples of an anime where the EDs are almost as iconic as the OPs.
Definitely. I think Roundabout will forever be the most iconic one, but it's cool the sort of like the lineage of the EDs themselves with each part.
I don't know, man. Part 4's ED.
It's fucking amazing.
It's fucking amazing.
It is amazing, but I think the recognizability of part 1's ED is just out there.
Yeah. If part 4 had All-Star, maybe it would have made it, but who knows.
That was a rumor for so long, too, that it was going to be the ED song.
It's cool how that's sort of a way for Araki to incorporate himself to the production in terms of to work with them specifically on the EDs, because he picked the songs, if I'm not mistaken, for all the EDs, and then that sort of like gave the at least he was partnered with the studio about picking the song.
Let's be honest, if money were no option, there probably would have been a Prince song as the ED for part four.
Oh, I bet.
But Prince's music is so legendarily expensive to license.
Yep. So, and again, music is such a major factor with JoJo with all the references, but we'll get into. So that's all the techno stuff out of the way. So what actually happened in part one in Phantom Blood? Not a lot, but the thing with part one, it's structured in a way where there's like three sections to it, really. There's like the first three episodes, which by themselves are like sort of a complete story. And then you get to the next four episodes, which is kind of a slog, if I'm being honest. Then the ending, like the climax, is super memorable. But the first three episodes are like, I love how there's such a there's like a cringe curve you need to go through when you watch it for the first time. What I mean by that is like, they're so dramatic. It's so like, everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe he kissed that girl. Oh no. It's like, everyone's so over dramatic about everything.
If that's like a relic of its time, where like it reads very like Speed Racer esque, where it's like thing happens and now everyone needs to react. But again,
shonen. It's very old school shonen that way.
Yeah, it's very. But again, that is part of the structure that makes JoJo so good, though, and how Araki makes it way better. And
work.
Yeah. It just works.
It just works.
Just works.
And.
The stylist, but how does King Crimson work? Sorry.
Listen,
Crimson is bullshit. So I think it's funny that you think the middle part is the slog, because I think the slog is the first three episodes.
Seriously?
I really do. Because I think the middle part I actually like, because I'm like, hey, this is the traditional shonen that I've grown to know and love. Because it's very traditional shonen in the middle. So I understand why people you would call it a slog, because it's like, you know, what's this about? It's about this guy who discovers that he truly has the strongest of all hearts, and he is going to win through the sheer power of friendship and love.
It's interesting because the first three episodes, so it's basically focusing about JoJo and Dio's like growing up together and that whole shenanigans.
Very Dario Brando and Dio Brando, and like, why is this comically evil guy like even here?
Speaking of, so Dio Brando reference to actual Dio, Holy Diver, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Holy Diver,
it's funny to me that they had every opportunity in part three to use Dio's Egypt as the ED song, and they didn't.
But they didn't do it.
So also, his last name is a reference to Marlon Brando.
That's right. So we are introduced to, first of all, we're introduced to this fucking. So Dirty Dario Brando, the drunken old man, he's like scavenging around in like 1868, and he finds this like carriage getting thrown after an accident, get thrown off a cliff, and he finds the densest fucker ever, George Joestar, and he's like, oh, let's fucking grab his money, whatever. Then he wakes up and he's like, oh no, it's like, thank you for saving me. It's like, of course, whatever. He basically owes his life to Dario, apparently. And then we're introduced years later to his son, Dio, the most fabulous fucker ever. And I love how Araki is like, how do we get people to hate this guy? Oh, he kicks a dog in the face. First time we see him. And
he does a little more than kick that dog.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
He just served him a hot dog. It doesn't matter, bro. That relationship, though, between... Jojo and Jonathan and Dio, it's like the crux of part one. I think that's why the beginning of the ending of part one works so well for me, because it's literally just that, like the relationship between the two. Because I know you, so John, you said that part one is very hard to get into, but I think the human drama at the core of it is still very compelling, even though it's covered, you know, like the weirdness of JoJo, because you know, you have these like,
yeah, it's
weird
writing, like,
and the colors the change. Human
drama is the most compelling part of it. Honestly,
yeah.
Part one is like was it a litmus test? Is that the word? Is that the phrase I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like part one, you're not gonna like JoJo's, bro. If you can't get over part one, you might not like JoJo's.
Because
JoJo is this weird, like,
because it's so weird. It's so weird, dude. Because you get through, all right, first 1 to 3, it's like, okay, this is back. This is story set up. This is like, it's weird, like, that this comically evil dude is so comically evil. He's like, JoJo, I'm going to turn you into an empty husk of a person. It's like, what? I'm going to infiltrate and be the perfect son, and then I'll take everything from you. And it's like, why?
And it works. So I love how his father is so disproving of him. His dad is like, JoJo, why do you use your fork like this? You don't get any dinner for now.
JoJo, look at Dio. He is well mannered. He is the ideal perfect son. And it's like, dude, what? Like, what is this story about? Right? And then you get past it, so you think, oh, it's a human drama thing, and then the football thing happens, and then it's like, oh, Dio hasn't really changed.
That rugby scene is amazing, by the way.
That rugby scene is incredible.
And it's like, you think it's originally you start off like that, right? You're like, okay, it's just some random weird thing that's happening, and there's like Jack the Ripper and all this other crap comes in later, but it has Ripper nothing.
Comes out of a dead horse in episode 3. That's incredible.
Is that episode 3? That doesn't happen in episode 3.
Yes, it is.
I think it was.
It doesn't matter, John. It doesn't matter what episode it happens in. It happens. That's the crux of the argument.
Oh, wait. It might be episode 4. My bad.
I swear that was in episode 4.
That was episode 4. Sorry. Yeah, you're right.
That's not the big deal here, John. The big deal is Jack the Ripper comes out of a dead horse.
I guess.
It's incredible.
But, Kurosaki Jack. Anyway. So we end off in episode 3 with like, okay, we've finally exposed Dio for being an evil piece of shit. He's been trying to poison George. He's been poisoning George this entire time, just like how he poisoned his father. And he's going to take the wealth of this Joestar family for himself. And
then the fucking fight that they have in the mansion as it's like crumbling down. And it's so, and like, I love how, because, and that's like almost a blueprint for what's to come. How like, they try and keep outsmarting each other. It's like Jonathan is like, oh, okay, I got away with him. And then Dio is like, no, you don't. And like, he keeps like outwitting him. And that's like basic JoJo fights down the line where it's like outsmarting each other over and over. It's very like primitive and very basic right now, but you can see like the sparks of what it will become later. It's kind of crazy.
It's very Princess Bride-esque, where it's like, yes. I knew you would choose that, so I chose this, because you knew would choose that. And it's like, dude.
I still need to watch that.
Oh, it's a great movie.
You didn't watch Princess Bride?
It's a phenomenal movie.
Princess Bride.
Incredible. What kind of nerd movie. Are you not have seen Princess Bride? Anyway.
It's on the movie list.
I reject my humanity, Chunoda.
And then the freaking stone mask finally comes into play. And we're like,
after
what
teasing
is it?
For like 3 episodes.
Yeah, which they've been teasing since the beginning, because it's like, what is this weird mask that Dario's like, yeah, fuck it, it's just a stone mask, who cares, kick it away. And like,
and
apparently
that everyone triggers the Dio's transformation into a vampire.
Yeah, because I remember Jonathan.
So he's trying to activate the mask through,
Jonathan was working, like researching it, because he's like, oh, this is the thing, my mother had this, and I never met my mother because she died when I was little, so this is the only thing I have of her. So I need to investigate this. It's like, okay, but why?
No, but investigate it because in the first part, in the first episode, when they fight each other and he punches Dio, a little of his blood like spills on the mask and it like triggers.
Yeah.
So like he's curious about it. So he's investigating it further.
Yeah, but it's like, why did she have this mask? What is this mask's significance? Like
we don't know.
So you think it's supposed to be some, like, again, it's a murder mystery thing. It's like, okay. But it's like, nah, we're not going to do any of that. Like, actually, they do have mystery kind of.
They go into a little bit.
Well, but it's not the mystery that you, it's not a traditional like whodunit, is what I'm saying.
No, it's not like you have mystery like elements about like, you know, to be like, okay, what's up with that? But the crux of the story is JoJo and Dio, and that nothing ever takes away from that aside from like the 3 episode. In the middle of the part, which are like, let's fight these random knights that don't really matter a whole lot.
That's the thing. I like that part because, like, when he fights Bluford.
Yeah.
Buford. Yeah. So when he fights Bluford and we totally skipped the best part of episode 4.
Zeppelin. The wagon.
No, what do you mean, Zeppeli, bro?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right, Zeppeli.
But we did skip Speedwagon. That's also true.
We are not going to skip Speedwagon.
No. He meets one of the man who makes JoJo's possible in the first place. All the events of JoJo's possible in the first place. Robert Edward Oliver Speedwagon. REO Speedwagon.
Captain, oh my captain.
The best wingman ever. The Eternal Virgin. I love how Jonathan wins his heart over, where it's like, he's like, no, I'm not gonna hurt this man, he has a family. And then Spigo is like, this man is a true gentleman, I can't hurt him.
You had every opportunity to kill me with that kick, but you didn't. Why?
Can I just say, Speedwagon is introduced with that hat that comes off and does like the little blades and stuff,
and it never comes back.
Never see it ever again.
Incredible.
Such a cool hat, though.
It is a cool hat.
It's like kind of like replaced by a better hat.
What's that dude? Is it Odd Job in Bond that has a hat that does that too?
Odd Job. Yeah, the bowling hat that he throws.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty. What else? And I love how Speedwagon becomes this character who's just to, like, whenever there's a fight, he's just to the side. Oh my god, he's so incredible! How he's using this technique?
He's, yeah, I know. Like, he's the commentary dude from Shonen. Yeah. Yeah, he's a traditional commentary dude.
He's the bench.
He is Flavor Flav. He's the bench.
But it's so funny. Yeah, so, every single time Speedwagon reacts is so fucking funny.
Oh my god, Mr. Joestar! I love that meme of him like staring through the door, and it's like it's someone put it made it a meme with it where it's like he walks in on him and Arena having sex, and he's like, "Oh, what a fantastic technique, Mr. Joestar!"
So after that fight with Dio, that first like climactic fight, that pretty much ends the first section of the story. So we do meet Zeppeli, and we introduced to the unique magic thing of JoJo for this now, which is Hamon, which preceded
some bullshit. Huh?
You mean bullshit?
It's not bullshit. It's such... breathing technique before Demon Slayer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is what inspired Demon Slayer. Actually, guys, like
actually, it's the same thing. It's breathing. It's just breathing. Which I love the demonstration where it's like, oh, you can. Through breathing, you can control your body and your environment. And he punches the frog, and the stone beneath the frog breaks.
But it doesn't break.
I love
the
that
frog.
Section.
So stupid, and I love it. That's pure JoJo.
Hamon is so fucking stupid, bro. It's like Hamon cool thing... is about it flows through your blood. Mm-hmm. It's part of a breathing technique. It harnesses the power of the goddamn sun.
But they commit to it.
But
they commit to how much?
But you can't
commit
use it
to like
for
the science behind it.
Apparently, you can't use it for destruction. Yet it can break stone, but it can't do anything against metal. I'm like, what does that mean? I don't understand. Is metal not just refined stone?
Yes.
How does metal not conduct? And if
they
metal
have a refinder
not,
technique, yet, no, John.
If metal did not conduct Hamon, how did he use the sword, huh, Natai? How did he put Hamon in the goddamn sword?
Because it's pluck and luck. That's the whole... He used the
what is pluck? What is pluck?
So pretty much they have this like whole training session with Zeppeli, and like they introduce the concept of Hamon, which like it's kind of cool how much they commit to it with the sciency aspects of it. It's like, wow, he makes his body temperature flow more so he's hotter and then his effects more... It's kind of, I think it's really funny and ridiculous. But then right after that, they hear spottings of Dio. He's still alive in
Dio?
In Midnight Slot, this fucking cursed place. And this section of the story is like four episodes in this location. And there's not a whole lot of story, but there are fights. So as we talk about when would they get there, they meet these two knights, Brufford and the other guy's name. I'll look it up. Tarkus.
Yeah.
And you can see that Araki is trying to like make more interesting scenarios. Like, oh no, his ability is like breathing. What does he do underwater? And it's like, sure, like you can see, is still like trying to figure out.
Well, Midnight Slot used to be it's a collapsed coal mine, so the floor collapsed. There's trapped air underneath.
There's trapped air underneath. Which
opens
is like,
it up and breathes the air from underneath the water. Freaking starts his Hamon. Like what?
And you can see like he's trying to figure out like his how to write compelling fights, and he's trying, which is whatever. But so you do have
bless
the fight.
His heart.
Bless his heart. So, and after the fight with Tarkus, then they move on to this like temple with Brufford, and then they introduce like Zeppeli, like, oh, this is the place where I die.
No, that was with Tarkus.
Brufford is the guy with the hair?
Yes. Brufford's the
My bad. I'm a fake JoJo fan. I missed it.
Fake JoJo fan, bro. Like, come on.
It is cool how they try to give them both the knights like the backstory of how they used to serve the queen, but then they like were executed. It's like,
Well, I really liked the Bluford fight because after Jonathan eventually hits him with Hamon and stops him from being a zombie, then he regains his humanity. And then it's like it shows what in typical Iraqi fashion, it's come full circle now with Jonathan, like at the beginning, not being a gentleman and trying to figure out what it means to be a gentleman. And as it turns out, being a gentleman just means to be a caring guy and means to keep your word. And it's like he didn't want to strike Bluford once he realized Bluford had a his humanity back. He's like, I don't need to fight you anymore.
Oh, he didn't reject his humanity anymore.
Yeah, he didn't. My cat was attacking the screen. Sorry.
Let her attack. Let her be.
No. She was pawing at your face, Chinoda.
I love how all of you are mispronouncing his name, by the way. It's Bruford, not Bluford.
I
thought it was Bruford.
No, B-R-U-F-O-R-D. Bruford.
No, it was subtitled as Bluford on Crunchyroll. I rewatched it on Crunchyroll.
Looking at Mal right now.
Oh my god.
Bruford. It's Bruford.
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 After a Bruford fight, we move on to the Tarkus fight in the temple where Zeppeli claims his like end is nigh, and they introduce this like this mechanism of the chain where both Tarkus and Jonathan have this like chain wrapped around their necks and like using the weight is like, and again, interesting scenario for this like section because it's like, oh, his power is breathing. And then I will say, by this point, like they choose the character of Poco and he sucks.
Who is Poco? Just a kid, a kid
he's
that was
just a kid. He's a kid who's looking for his hot sister. It's awful,
and it's totally not incestuous. We promise, guys.
It's not.
And again, that fight, like there's and that fight leads to something that I really want to talk to because death is like a major thing in JoJo, and it's funny going back to part one, seeing the death scenes being written so kind of in a cliche way.
Yeah, like no, people just get bodied. Literally, like, Mr. Police Officer, get down! Freaking head gets scooped off.
No, like, not even that matter. So when a main character dies, like it's like the Hollywood classic, like, oh, they get to say their last words.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
They die and they close their eyes. So both with his dad and with Zeppeli when they die, they have this like, even Zeppeli where it's like his body is torn
literally
together.
In half, he's like, missing one arm.
But let me tell you about how I knew about this prophecy.
Interesting. I think this is a very good point to look at in Araki's writing in terms of when he was figuring things out and how he wanted to do things. And JoJo deaths as what we know now versus back then, aka part one, you can see the difference through watching this.
Definitely.
Don't get used to characters having a chance to say anything in their last words as you go through JoJo's.
One of the cool things about
characters that live.
Yeah.
It's cool seeing how he progresses as both like in his art and his writing. And like, I think looking at the death scenes, because they're so impactful in these stories. So like looking at them compared to part one as well, it's like, oh man, like you can tell how he's like very, he's figuring out his style, but he's like also learning as he goes and like continually improving and more. But yeah, so once we get after the Tarkus fight, we start meeting more useless side characters, which again, it's funny how like right near the end. So after the fight, they basically like, oh, Dio is in this like castle and he's building a zombie army and he's going to conquer the world and we have to stop him. And we meet all these like
the writing that they have for Dio is phenomenal because in typical like super villain fashion, he's like, I'm gonna leave my servants to finish you off, JoJo. I'm not even gonna supervise anymore. And he just leaves, even though he's like this all-powerful being that could quite literally could just, and he knows like JoJo's power is literally the more he gets beat down, the stronger he comes back. And he acknowledges that when he's still human. And yet now that he's a vampire and he's transcended humanity because he's rejected his humanity, right? He's like, oh yeah, I'm way above this. I'll let my servants take care of it. And he just leaves. And he's just so comically evil about being like, yeah.
And they get bodied in the meantime, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and obviously they're gonna die because they gotta die to the main character. But it also falls into line with like with his whole facade, you know, the whole thing that Speedwagon talks about. It's like when he meets when he meets Dio for the first time, he's like, "Don't fall for it, Mr. Joestar. He's evil. He's the most evil man I've ever met in my life." He's like, "I deal with scumbags all the time." And it's like, yeah, because Dio is that. It's awesome that Speedwagon can see that. And I love how it comes full circle later on with Dio and like the whole false facade. Because while JoJo is fighting, or while Jonathan is fighting Tarkus and Brufford, Dio is just up in his castle, just being like comically fucking evil. Again, super mega evil.
Just like killing people. Like,
yeah, it's like there's that mother who has her child and she's like, "Please spare my child." He's like, "Oh, I'm offering you immortality. You and your child could live forever and join me as long as I would never force you to have this decision." And then she's like, "Just promise me you won't hurt my child." He's like, "Fine, I'll promise me and my retinue will not hurt your child." And he turns her into a vampire, and then she rips the throat out of her kid. And it's like, yo, what?
Yeah, he's almost like he turns to the camera and says, "See, I told you I wouldn't do it."
Yeah. It's just like he's so freaking evil, man. God.
Shout outs to Takehiro Koyasu, the voice actor, because this is like his most iconic role ever, and his performance of Dio is insane.
It's so iconic. He is so iconic. We never even say his name. We just say Dio when we talk
Dio.
About
Dio. He's always Dio.
He's recognized as now.
It's incredible how much like personality he has, and it's funny how we have all these like small moments in part one that then later on become like the memes. Like the first time he becomes a vampire, jumps to a scene, it's like goes, it's very, very, it's like he does the thing.
He doesn't even start that though. The guy that he meets at the port goes first.
That's true. But then one of my favorite parts where he does the Muda 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 first for the first time.
Muda Muda Muda!
It's incredible.
His
performance is incredible in this part. So the gang meets a few of the mentors where we meet. I'm just gonna give a quick shout out to Dire and Straits because it's named after one of my favorite band, Dire Straits.
Dire Straits is a phenomenal band.
Nothing.
I love that Dire. He exists for like one episode, right?
Yeah. One episode or two.
Full episode. I don't think he doesn't live the full episode. But one of my favorite meme from part one has always been like, "You fell for it, you fool! Thunder an attack!" I love that. That was one of the memes that I was like, "This is so fucking funny." Like, what? "You fell for it, you fool."
And for those who don't know, behind the scenes, John quotes this a lot.
All the time. It's one of my favorite JoJo.
Thundercross split attack is incredible. I love that.
Almost as iconic as Sunlight the Yellow Overdrive.
Oh god, all the freaking overdrive skills. But no, like I remember was it Speedwagon that made the comment about, "My god, Thundercross split attack. He's defending attacking. It's literally the ultimate ability.
Yeah, and then Dio is like, just splits him open.
Like, no. Oh my god.
That's the most memorable part of that fight. It's like, it's so ridiculous how he goes like that.
Yeah. But
I was so disappointed
for like the ridiculous absurdity of JoJo's. Like, you thought the first beginning was stupid and crazy? No. It gets more crazy and stupid.
I love how he uses the roses as well. Like, when he rips his head, then his head just falls on the bed of roses. His head
falls off, but then he still can use the concentrated power of Hamon and spits the rose into Dio's eye. Roses are a living thing, so they contain Hamon. And they can, it has residual Hamon. Like, okay. That makes sense, I guess. And I love how does Dio, at this point, even know, like, when he first meets Zeppeli, when he summons the servants, right? He talks about how he knows Hamon and he can just like, "Oh, I can just lower your body temperature. So Hamon is powered by blood and I can lower your body temperature so your blood doesn't flow so you can't circulate Hamon. So I can just body you that way because I have perfect mastery over my vampiric powers that apparently control body temperature, I guess." how does he know about that? How did he know about any of this prior to to Zeppeli showing up? Because as far as we know, this is the first time Zeppeli and Dio have ever met. because Zeppeli's like, I've been hunting. And how did Zeppeli even know about Dio? He's like, I know about the master of the servant of the stone mask.
Because
like,
he knew about the Chinese the doctor mask. Was also a vampire. He supplied the poison to Dio.
Was he always a vampire? I thought Dio turned him.
Yeah, oh he was God. A vampire.
And do you remember his name, Natai?
Wang Chung. Wang Chung.
Phenomenal.
And so then we reach the main event. So it's JoJo versus Dio for the final time, supposedly part one. And again, we see those seeds of like what comes later with JoJo, where like he's piercing with the sword. It's like, I got you, I froze your hands, but oh no, he put the sword in the fire to warm the sword fire, up.
He's like, oh, it's melting faster than I can freeze the sword. And again, I ask you, how the fuck does Hamon work in a sword? Because as far as
dude,
we know,
don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Rule of cool.
Rule of Hamon fucking is not cool. supposed to go through metal, bro.
Because he's put the P on luck, so it's pluck. So it's working now.
John, rule of cool. Just go with it, bro.
John, you asked a question earlier about what does pluck even mean. It literally means determined courage.
Really?
Yeah. Pluck is a word. It means determined courage.
He's a plucky guy.
Oh, I did not know pluck was a real word. Okay.
Yeah,
that makes
it's a real
more
thing.
Sense. I just thought it was so dope because I was like, when he was like, you can have my sword, luck, and I'll give you this. And he writes a letter. I'm like, what could you write on this that makes it a different word? Pluck. And I'm like, what does that mean? Power luck? That's what I thought
power
originally.
Luck.
Power
nah,
luck.
He's trying to tell him that he's so courageous that he can accomplish anything.
That makes a lot more sense. It still doesn't show how Hamon was able to be transmitted into it because it's a fucking metal object, but okay.
So, wait, when did they say that Hamon can be conducted through metal?
It can go through metal.
It can
go through metal, but apparently it gets dispersed if it touches walls, but it can also go through walls and explode rock. And Zeppeli couldn't destroy the steel door in the in that battle chamber because it was made of metal.
It was too thick.
No, because he said it was because it's inorganic. Because Hamon can only travel through organic things. So I'm just saying it doesn't make sense. How they explain Hamon and how it's supposed to work does not make sense. And then
because
in all
it's
of part
pluck.
One. Yeah, because it's pluck. You have because to write pluck. Up. Because, you know, I get it. I'm asking for a lot of logic in a show about vampires.
Bro, Jack the Reaper jumps out of a dead horse in episode 4. What are you talking about?
I know. I'm asking quite a lot. I know. But I just want it just didn't make any sense. But you know, but again, it's supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be nonsensical. It's not supposed to make sense. It's supposed to just be fucking funny.
It's the entertainment of the absurdity of everything. Yeah. Because like my favorite quote from part one is the is that moment when they confront Dio for the last time. It's like, how many lives have you ended? How many people have you eaten? And he's like, how many loaves of bread have you eaten in your life?
No. He's like, Dio, how many lives have you taken just to heal those scars? And he's like, how many pieces of bread have you eaten in your life? He's
and JoJo's like, Dio! what is your favorite quote from this part?
Goodbye, JoJo.
Yeah, I love goodbye, JoJo.
This will be a recurring question in this podcast.
No, dude, obviously. Kono Dilda!
Yeah, it has to be that. It has to be that.
Oh, I love that one.
For you, Chinoda,
I just like the goodbye.
It's that. Kono Dilda.
It has to be Dio!
It's so fucking iconic.
I like the goodbye Dio. Just had the glee in his voice when he said
goodbye, JoJo.
Goodbye, JoJo.
And I don't know why he just chose to use English then. Prior to this, I don't think he used English at all.
It's like when Zeppeli fights Turkey. He's like, yeah, baby.
Hey, baby. Hell yeah. Like, I understand that they're supposed to be, they're in England in the 1800s, right? They're English gentlemen. So I understand that they're supposed to be speaking English this entire time, which you don't obviously, you know, because I watch it in Japanese, and it's like, because it's Japanese to me. I am told that the English dub is pretty good in the new one, Alex, if I recall correctly.
It's decent. The original English dub for this was not very good. It was, they basically told everyone, fake a British accent. It's not good. Oh,
that sounds bad.
Oh, governor, cup of tea, isn't it? Tuesday.
Which is, I will say, in certain parts, it makes it unintentionally funny. Like the part where Dio steals the kiss from Arena. Like his little henchmen that are always following around is like, hey, he did it, didn't he? They could never be as cool as Dio.
Oh, shit.
They have these, like, very obvious fake Cockney accents. It's terrible.
I mean, I will say shout out to, was it Patrick Seitz, I think?
Who Patrick Seitz, yeah, Dio? Does the voice of Dio.
Yeah, and he's like, he does a good job, I think, as Dio, for the most part.
Johnny Young Bosch is the voice of Jonathan in the dub. It's one of his few roles that I'm like, this is not very good, Johnny.
Oh, no.
It's kind of whatever, no. Are you planning on watching the dubs for future parts, Alex? Because I know you watched some sections of
doing the rewatches. I'm probably just gonna watch it in Japanese. I have watched English dubs of these before, though.
I see. So to wrap this up, so Dio is defeated finally, and then we get like the epilogue of part one, where it's like everyone's living happily ever after. Jonathan and Aaron are getting married. Speedwagon's still third wheel, but whatever.
He leaves the room to give them privacy because he understands the assignment.
That's what you think. and then it, like the final stretch is Aaron and Jonathan going on like their like honeymoon, and
I think it's a cruise to America.
It's a cruise to America. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they talk about, oh, she's pregnant, they're having a baby, and it's this and that. And these men are like carrying this coffin that's surprisingly like very heavy. And one of them is like, oh, I think I hear something. Then you just hear Dio go, please.
Yeah. It's like, oh, Dio's in there.
It's like, psyched, Dio's still alive. Long story short, he's planning on taking over Jonathan's body and then remaining immortal because he's now obsessed with Jonathan gaining control of his body. It's like, no, I'll actually make you immortal.
Now Jonathan.
He respects Jonathan.
The one thing that he didn't do was respect anyone but himself because, you know, Dio's number one. But after being foiled, not just once, but twice now by Jonathan, he's like, I respect you, Jojo. That is why you are the pinnacle body that I want. It's like, ayo.
Suddenly became very homoerotic.
John and I were talking about this, was it yesterday, where it's like, you know, we watch JoJo's for the homosexual overtones. We tolerate the fact that the main JoJo's are straight.
We do tolerate that, but...
Except for Jolene. I think she's... never mind.
What? She has a boyfriend. She had.
Bro, she's fucking bi as fuck. Listen, come on.
She gives off so much bi energy. Yeah,
probably.
Bro, I still haven't watched part six, so no one say any spoilers.
We'll get to it.
Hold on. What do you mean you haven't watched part six yet?
Because it's on Netflix.
You haven't watched Princess Bride, Shinoda.
Bro,
don't shame him.
Come on.
Shinoda, listen, shut the fuck up, Shinoda. You haven't seen Princess Bride.
You can't shame John.
I'll eventually. You know, I watched. Because for me, how I watched JoJo's was I saw obviously memes and stuff, and I knew about part three. So then I watched part one, two, and three. And then, it was like a year after part four finished airing that I was like, okay, I'll finally go watch part four. And then it was like a year or so after part five finished airing that I was like, okay, I'll go watch part five. So we're coming up on a year, I believe, for part six, or actually we're past a year already.
Almost a year and a half.
Year and a half, so I guess I should watch part six now to follow my trend of okay, now that the hype has died down, I'll go watch it.
And if the pattern
hype?
Follows,
there was no hype.
If the
apparently
pattern follows,
there was
no
hype for part six, though. Everyone was disappointed.
Netflix butchered it. They butchered it. We'll get to it.
If the pattern follows, though, Natai, within the next year, we should get an announcement about part seven.
Oh, bro, yeah,
I'm excited for part seven, though.
You'll have to give us your prophecy.
Oh, he's already has.
I'll have to math it out, but we'll do that later, maybe. So basically, Dio confronts Jonathan. there's a scuffle, like there are zombies on deck, and I love how intense like this section gets. Like, oh my god, like what's actually gonna happen, because people are dying left and right.
Yeah, there's a bunch of freaking zombies just running around the boat and just eating people.
And then Chung Wang,
whatever the Chinaman's name is, he's like, I followed your orders, Master Dio. I infected only one passenger, and now by the time we get to America, we'll have a whole army. And it's like, oh no, what shall we ever do?
And then
ship up.
And then what happened? Like Jonathan like throws one of their bodies into like the engine, so like it stops and it's about
What Jonathan does is that he gets attacked by Dio, and it's like he can't breathe, so he can't use his hamon. But he gathers up the rest of his hamon that he could muster up. The final hamon. And he like chops off the Chinese guy's head. And then somehow, after chopping his head off with the last of his hamon, was able to make him control his body to go grab the pistons or the engines to make it so the steam would build up and blow up, so the ship blows up and all the freaking people die in it, I guess. And it's like, what?
And in the chaos, Arena manages to save like this baby as well. And Jonathan pretty much like is dying, and you realize like, oh, there's no way out of this for him. It's like he's actually gonna die. What?
Yeah, I know, like a main protagonist actually dying. Like, what?
Haven't That's seen insane. That in a good while. When you're used to watching anime where it's so much happy-go-lucky, or like the main character always comes out on top. Yeah,
like he's literally in the middle of getting his happily ever after, and it's like, nope, he has to die.
Psych.
And you're just like, what? There's got to be something that saves him.
Yeah.
That image of him like holding Dio's head, it's like slowly it's like dying. It's like, then you see, it's like, oh, it's just a husk now. It's that moment is so powerful when you actually get to it. It's like, it makes watching the entire part worth it.
But it also, again, everything comes full circle, because so we skipped over the thing about Dio. Like when he finally gets damaged and is like actually about to die, rips off his facade of like, I'm a cool, level-headed, evil supervillain. It's like, nope, you're just an evil piece of shit. And he's just like, he's unabashedly evil. It's like, that's full circle now. And now we've come to the close for Jonathan. It's come full circle of like, he's dying, but he wants Arena to live.
Be safe.
And be safe. And like, for whatever reason, this tomb or casket that Dio came in is now dynamite proof. So we can save her, perfect. I guess. Perfect. But in traditional Jonathan fashion, as a true gentleman, he saves the one that he loves, and he has her live and save another child. On top of that, he holds Dio in his arms as he's dying, because it's like his brother, because he has always loved Dio. Even though he hated Dio and they fought, he still loved him as his brother.
It's the traditional heroic sacrifice trope.
And I was just like, god damn it, Jonathan, you naive son of a bitch. God damn it, man.
It's crazy how, like, it's interesting, because there's this one quote that I wrote down for myself. So apparently it's from like the first volume of part one, where Araki says, put simply, the theme of the work is living. Through the two main characters, I want to examine two ways of living. It's all about singing the hymn of the battle between human and non-human. And you can tell that, like, that's like the vision he had.
Yeah,
like
the main theme of it. Yeah. Yeah, a man who has everything given to him, but still rejects his humanity because he believes himself to be a higher being, and he's a non-human, versus a true gentleman who truly believes in the power of humanity. Because that's something that, I forget who's the one who asked him that. I think it was Bruford, right? Like, you truly
either
believe
Bruford or Tarkus.
It was Bruford. Yeah, when he's fighting Bruford at the end, or towards the end of Bruford's fight, he
asks him about the humanity. Stops the
strike. Yeah. He's like, do you truly believe that much in humanity? He's like, I do. And it's like, again, that's why I like the middle part, because it sets up a lot of character for Jonathan himself and for a lot of the story to go forward.
It's also cool how like that theme of like the resolve of humanity is something you see throughout all of JoJo's.
Yeah.
Like, to some extent, more times than other, but like that main core of like humanity and like the resolve of humanity is like a big aspect of JoJo. And it's cool that it's set up this early on. you know.
Now, another thing though about JoJo's is like it's been unique to its own story so far, but it still is a shonen because we have the master who shows up out of nowhere, who can master stuff, who gives his final skill to the main protagonist guy, who is also super powerful in it. Like this man is overflowing with hamon. He might be the strongest hamon user of all. And it's like the heroic sacrifice at the end. Like there's so many stereotypical shonen tropes inside of JoJo's Part One, but it doesn't feel like that. Like you have to really cool think about it. Like it does exist in it. It is stereotypical shonen, but it's presented not like a stereotypical shonen. It's actually
and the crazy
like
thing is that the more we get into JoJo, we'll see more like things that we take for granted in shonen manga. But when you think about it, at the time, it was like Araki doing something different from the rest of the pack.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Like whether it's like Jonathan dying in the end of Part One, or how he's gonna build on the cast for Part Two and then Part Three. Like we'll see how those like ripple and like affect more and more mangakas throughout the. It's crazy how.
Yeah, that's JoJo's another like, one of the things that people who don't know, like we said in the beginning, JoJo's is from the 80s. Man, it's old. It is very old.
1986. So,
for a story crazy. To tell this type of story, it was not done before. It was unheard of. So this is like another reason why a lot of people respect Araki's works, because he's such a trendsetter. Not much of a trendsetter, but he's a mold breaker.
Yes. Yeah, actually, that's better. Yeah.
Bro, he literally created the first yandere. It's crazy.
Did he actually?
In Part Four.
Really?
In Part Four, yeah.
He was the first one.
That's the first yandere, yeah.
No way.
He created her as like a sort of like trying to do a different type of female character, and then suddenly everyone were doing that type of female character. After
they're like, "Holy shit, he cooked! He fucking cooked!"
I remember reading an interview that he did one time where he was actually talking about that, and he said he wanted to create a female character that was essentially a stalker that people could actually like.
So he's to blame for yandere dev.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh no.
He's to blame. He's to blame for Mirai Nikki.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
no.
So yeah, that's the ending of Phantom Blood, with Erina surviving with the baby and her own baby as well as the other baby. Upon rewatching this, so what did you guys feel like going and rewatching this part of JoJo again? Like, what was that experience like?
So,
did you change your mind about the part? Was it like the same?
My complaints about the story are still the same. There's still so many nonsensical elements. And I can't forget, again, my first time watching through and being like, what the fuck is JoJo's about? Why do people like this? But, like I said, once you get past the first three episodes, then it starts, because you get into the real meat of JoJo's at episode four, or episode four of Part One. And that's like, but this it's like it's hard for me to judge, because it's like I watching it first time and I'm like, okay, this is the good stuff. Why didn't lead with this? What was the point of the first three? It didn't really make it didn't it wouldn't contribute too much if we cut the first three episodes into like two.
Nah.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm
I love the beginning.
But what it's like everything in JoJo's Part One has the structure. It has the structure of JoJo's in it. And that has not changed. And it's that nonsensical craziness that makes JoJo so good. In the way that it's presented. And I do think that the how Araki later turns he more towards comedy and like the comic relief stuff on top of the whole crazy bullshit makes it a lot better. I like that he went towards that route more so than the trying out the like just the rest of Part One
drama.
Like if the rest of the rest of the drama, if the rest of JoJo's was just like Part One, I don't think it'd be as good as it is, because every part progressively gets a lot better, in my opinion.
The evolution of this series is insane. Yeah.
But yeah,
watching
my second playthrough, or rather second, is third?
Playthrough?
Third watch? Playthrough. Watching it again on my rewatch, I still have the same problems with that I originally had, which is like, this is nonsensical. If you were not invested in JoJo's by the time you start Part One, you might hate the series. But if you can get past the, the first four episodes, it gets really good, because there is a good story to be told in this. It's just that the way that Dio is presented as this nonsensical, evil fucking person who does random bullshit, like kissing Aaron.
That's the fun. That's the fun.
But like, yeah, that absurdity, because there again, not a lot of shows start off with this level of stupid, evil, absurdity shit. Like, it's just insane to start a show off like this and have fans afterward. I feel like if it came out, if JoJo's never existed, if JoJo's did not become a and you know what? That's hard to say because JoJo's is such a phenomenon that has kicked off so many other things. It's such a huge influence to pop culture. It's hard to say if we judge JoJo's, if it came out today, would it be that unique?
It would be no Persona without JoJo, bro. Just
know. And it's that's true. And it's like, it's hard to say because you're right. It's nonsensical, but it is fun. That's the best part. It's fun. You have to get over that stupid, like,
there's an argument, there's an argument
factor or whatever it was.
What?
Like, there's that.
What's that?
Earlier, Natalia, you're talking about like there's like that cringe of
the
JoJo,
cringe curve,
right? The cringe curve. You have to get over that cringe curve to really get into JoJo's. Because I know a couple of people who watch JoJo's, like part one especially, they're like, this is not great, like, it didn't make sense, it's over the top, it's silly, and it's crazy. And I'm like, but that was the point.
That's the cool thing about that cringe curve, though. Like, just to finish that point, it's I think it kind of leads to maybe unintentionally to the effect of like, you're slowly getting used to like the weirdness and the absurdity of like, this is so fucking stupid that by the time like the actual like emotional gut punch of the story kicks in, you don't even expect it, but you're so invested that it actually hits you. It's like, oh no, I enjoy these characters. No, why? Especially with, like with Jonathan, it's like, so you're sort of like, oh, it's just like JoJo, but that emotional punch is like hits you right in the face.
It really does.
What about you, Alex? You were about to say something.
You were talked about how JoJo's kind of changed the landscape a little bit, especially when it comes to shonen. There's an argument to be made that without JoJo's, there may never have been a One Piece. Oda has said how like Araki getting into like being a mangaka and being a serialized mangaka is one of the things that really inspired him to create One Piece. So
holy shit! God.
Like, but it's true that like this manga really made waves and changed the landscape around it, as you said. Yeah. And we'll just see more example of this the further along we go in this forecast.
In regards to what you asked, though, like,
oh yeah,
something that has always surprised me about part one is I cannot bring myself to hate it in any way. I don't think it's the best part of JoJo's by far. In fact, in terms of JoJo's, it might actually be the least exciting part, but I'm still impressed going back and rewatching it, just how much was established in part one, and especially in terms of the anime, in only 9 episodes.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah.
It's great they managed to condense this part so succinctly, I guess you would say. Right?
And for those who don't know, there's like 3 to 3.5 chapters of the manga that aren't even in this adaptation at all.
It's a quick read, though. It's only 44 chapters, I think.
Yeah, it's something around 40 to 50 chapters. It's a very quick read.
What about you, Chinoda?
So, I have problems with, as everyone has said, there are problems with this part, especially when it comes to story, and there is a hump that you have to get over to enjoy. But once you do get over that hump, you can enjoy JoJo for what it is and what it presents. Not to mention the fact that I remember years ago, I've heard a lot of people say, yeah, you can just skip part one, get into the rest of it. And it's one of those things that I vehemently disagree with. It sets up so much story. It sets up the whole story of JoJo up to
it sets up the returning villain from like literally 90% of the volumes
from literally the beginning. And while you can just eventually guess or get a brief little flashback later on, you can't connect or appreciate the true wildness and evilness of Dio and know what type of trouble that the main heroes and heroines are truly in if you don't watch part one. And for that, I truly do appreciate part one. The music was...
I think it's weird to try to like get into part two without understanding the stone mask in part one. Like,
yeah, I've heard people do that, though. I have heard of people doing that.
Part two is so connected to part one.
I mean, it's so connected that on Crunchyroll, they call part one and two, part one.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
It's the same season, basically. But
yeah. I mean, it continues into it, but it's like technically it's not the same part.
I think
but...
you could easily start JoJo's at part three, though, because in part three, they kind of give you a brief synopsis of like Dio and what happens.
But it's kind of, why would you? Because there's so much to, like, even though it's
there's so much to unpack about Dio, though.
Yeah. I know.
You can't about fully start
let me put it this way. If you start with part three, you're missing out on part two, which
you
is
are.
Awesome.
You yeah, so I love part two. I love
Me too.
I can't wait for us to see part two. See, I was like Shinoda was saying, I was gonna skip part one on the spoiler cast just so I could be on part two. Because that's what I want to talk about.
thing I do wanna very quickly mention though, because we haven't talked about much, but we're about to wrap up. I do really want to give a shout out to the direction and the style of the anime is even in part one, remarkable. Like the change in color and the direction
it's itself. Supposed to go nighttime, like dark or whatever, they change the color palette and it's just it's pretty cool.
When it's like a revelation, it's like, oh no, he used this technique, like how the colors shift completely to show like the how like the thought process of the characters, like that's something we'll see more and more going forward. But like just want to give a quick shout out because this adaptation is like the de facto adaptation, I think. There is for JoJo, and for a good reason, because you can tell like the people who worked on it really loved the source material, how they adapted it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's an argument that could be made that without JoJo's Part One, would David Productions be as big as it is right now? Without the quality of JoJo's,
I doubt it.
I don't think so, honestly.
I mean, they've done some other decent stuff besides JoJo's.
Oh, absolutely, they've done.
Yeah, but their future work is what. The reason they got their future work was because of JoJo's, though.
Yeah,
definitely.
I would argue one of the reasons they survived this long is because of JoJo.
Yep, but I think that's about it. Is there any other
I cut off Shinoda.
Oh, sorry.
Stuff. I just completely forgot about that. What were you gonna finish off your thought about part one? The rewatch.
What was I saying?
Something about the music, I think.
Music
was fine. Very good at certain parts. The visuals were fantastic. It was very stylistically chosen, and I appreciate that. Sometimes it was a little bit weird, but I stuck through it, and I definitely appreciated what they chose to do. Overall, I think it was a great package that they put out to us. And even after rewatching it all these years later, I appreciate what they gave and what it led to.
Freaking 12 years old, this anime.
Yeah.
I'd also like to point out, since you mentioned David Productions, if you are like curious and you haven't checked out any of the other stuff, check out their remake of Odyssey Yatsura. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And definitely check out Sakurada Reset, right, Natai?
Don't check out Sakurada Reset. Don't.
Listen,
so yeah, I think that's about it.
Even the best have off days, Natai.
That was an off, like capital O off day. Yes, so that's what happened for part one.
David Productions.
Yeah,
we don't talk about Sakura Reset anymore. We're done. That's a wrap for part one. I'm super pumped to talk about part two next time when we get to it. That'll be a really fun discussion. So yeah, thank you everyone for dropping in to watch us. Please don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And let us know what you thought about part one in the comments below as well. We'd like to hear what you thought about it as well. And how much you liked or didn't like it. Check down below to find links to Anime Club After Dark on Twitter, TikTok, and Discord to always be in the loop with what is going on and chat with us and other fellow fans. We're fairly active in the Discord server as well. We also have a channel for like questions, whatever. Some good stuff there. We also stream.
And we fight for democracy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Check out our Twitch stream for a lot of Helldivers too as well. That's been a lot of fun. See you guys fuck around in. We have a merch store down there as well with shirts, mugs, stickers, and more to show off your love of Iron Club After Dark, and to your friends and family and whatnot. And with that, I've been your host, Itai, and we'll see you next time. Say goodnight, everybody.
Goodbye, Jojo.
Well, I didn't show you guys with Jojo pants. I just realized.
No, don't stand up.
Jojo pants.
Jojo pants.
Jojo pants.
Oh my god.
We're all cursed with this knowledge now.
Wait, I'll do the Jonathan pose.
Dun 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 dun.
Yo, we tried that last time in the JoJo's. We got freaking DMCA'd.
Oh no! Don't do it! Don't do it!